I flipped on my suit lights and climbed all over the machine. I found the front panel and dug around on it. I didn't see any obvious data ports or removable storage devices. I heaved a sigh. This was a lot of work for nothing. My shoulder was stinging and getting stiffer every minute. Soon it would be hard to defend myself without a regrow. I got out my tapper and searched it, but there was precious little on alien tech. It was against galactic law to study and reverse engineer an alien device like this. If you couldn't do it on your own, you had to let the original builders keep their monopoly. As a last-ditch effort, I engaged my helmet computer. It identified items I looked at, but most of us found that distracting. When you looked down at your gun, it told you all about the snap rifle in your hands. If you lifted a fork, it told you, "Fork," in glowing letters, with a command section that would honest to God look up the word fork and give you the dictionary definition. Because these systems were annoying, we usually kept them flipped off. But right now, I needed all the help I could get. I turned it on and carefully eyed the machine. It needed time to recognize each component, if it could. That meant staring fixedly at each item for about 10 seconds before the computer popped up its best guess at what the hell I was looking at. A few times, the results were hilarious. I wasn't in any mood to laugh, but I had to when it saw the stiff, dead, upraised claws of a saurian corpse and identified them as fingers. "Moron machine," I said. "Scales, claws, wrong dimensions and shape. Hell, they don't even have the same number of joints that we do." The computer ignored me and went right on happily identifying things. Sometimes the identifications shifted as my point of view and angle shifted. To get a full scan, I tried looking down on an object, then staring at it head-on, and finally looking at it from below. During the last of these 3 steps, while I was looking at a keyboard-like device on the front panel, the identification system spit out an interesting classification on my screen. Data slot. I frowned because I didn't see anything like a slot. I flipped on my lights, then got all the way down on my knees and crawled under there. "Data slot," it said again. "Are you sure?" I asked. As it wasn't voice-activated, it didn't react to my query. I tapped at my arm. The test was run again, and the answer came back the same. "Data slot." I opened my helmet and peered at it up close. The only thing it could be talking about was a rectangular section of metal in the surface of the machine under the control panel. Experimentally, I pushed my finger up to it and applied pressure. The metal folded inward and allowed my finger to push inside. I pulled it back, and it snapped shut. "That's gotta be it," I said aloud. "But how can I get anything out of it? I don't have a data stick. Certainly not one that will fit that slot, and I don't..." Growling in frustration, I realized I was talking to myself. Was that a sign of shock or insanity? A little of both, I suspected. I got back to my feet and began disassembling the panel. If the data slot was there, it had to lead somewhere in the guts of this machine. Quite literally, in the case of a revival unit. I'd been trained on data systems of every variety in college, but we'd never been allowed to fool with alien tech. That was something most professionals rarely saw unless they worked for a very rich company or hegemony itself. Fortunately, our suits came with a small toolkit. I disassembled the outer housing and pulled the front panel right off. I was immediately disgusted. My lips curled away from my teeth slowly and stayed there. It was a hybrid. I could tell right away these machines didn't come to Earth with a nice metal casing over them. Inside the box was a blob of flesh. It looked like a fatty ham, skinless and pink. Embedded in this wall of meat were numerous probes. These probes were connected with wires to the front panel. I ripped them out by the handful. I was horrified to see the flesh shiver as I did this. Could it be alive? Could it feel what I was doing somehow? I tried not to think about it. I tried not to think about anything. I took the housing off completely and ripped it loose from every connection, ignoring the disturbing, shuddering reactions. Finally, I had it off. It was big, about the size of a refrigerator door, torn off its hinges. I put it on my back, but my right arm protested. I thought of the air sled the Saurian had been using earlier. I tried it, but it was dead. It looked undamaged, but possibly it wouldn't work for a human. I cursed and gave it a kick. It was time to do things the hard way. Cursing steadily, I took a strap from Carlos's rifle, attached it to the panel, and began to drag it behind me. I looked at my watch. Adjunct Leeson had said he'd give us an hour, and I had 18 minutes to go. I began trotting with the panel sparking and banging behind me. If there were any other lizards around in these tunnels, they sure as hell weren't going to have to work hard to track me. Chapter 27. In the end, I made it out of the tunnel with about 4 minutes to spare. We'd marched into that hole carefully, looking around every corner. On the way out, I'd been running for my life despite my heavy, bumping burden. When I came out of the tunnel, they almost blew me away. There were 6 weaponeers and a full squad of light troops aiming at me. I must have looked like I had scales to these people, because every finger was on a trigger, and they looked like they were sweating and itching to pull them. "Friendly!" I shouted breathlessly. "Hold your fire! It's me, Recruit McGill. No pursuit is inbound." Leeson himself stalked forward. I saw veteran Harris behind him, waving down the upraised guns. The squadron let their muzzles drift down to aim at the steel floors disappointedly. "I can't believe I gave you clowns an hour," Leeson said. "About 1 minute after you left, I regretted it. If you only—" He broke off as I emerged and removed my helmet. He'd noticed the burden I was dragging behind me through the tunnels, and now stared down at it with a heavy frown. "What the hell is that, Recruit?" he demanded.
"That, sir, is the front panel of a revival unit. It will probably look more recognizable if I flip it over."
I got down on my knees and strained.
"Could you help me, sir? I'm injured."
"Are you shitting me? What did you do? You've damaged it. You've torn it apart. That's a very expensive piece of equipment, McGill. Do you realize that?"
I looked up at him. "Sir, did you really think we were going to be able to go down there and haul back the entire system intact in 1 hour? That would have required a full squadron and a lifter."
"I didn't expect you to tear it apart."
"Well, sir, this is the section of the machine that contains the data slot."
"What are all those meat thermometer-looking things dangling from it?"
"As far as I can determine, those couplings connect our human tech computers with the organic alien components inside revival units."
"That will be enough," said a new, loud voice.
We both looked up. A stern, pissed-off-looking bio named Thompson stood with her hands on her hips. She was a centurion, which surprised me. Most bios weren't officers.
"I'll take that piece of scrap, adjunct," she told Leeson.
"Can you do anything with it?" he asked.
"I can remove it from your possession. Those are my orders. This mission you sent the recruit on was ill-advised, adjunct. Authority levels have been superseded."
Adjunct Leeson chewed on his lip for a second. "Sir, I know the revival units are sacred cows for you bios, but we are talking about permed legionnaires here." Centurion Thompson glared at him.
"Please release the component into my custody immediately. I have an air sled with me."
Leeson stepped out of the way and waved them forward. I watched as 2 orderlies helped her load the broken panel onto an air sled. I would have liked to have had one of those handy earlier today. It was too small to have carried the entire machine, but it would have helped a lot in getting this piece out of the tunnels. The centurion threw a rattling plastic tarp over the scrap of metal when she had it loaded, and then carefully pushed the air sled away. She refused all help from the grunts around her, and only allowed her orderlies to touch the wreckage. She handled the air sled personally and attentively. She guided it away, as if it was carrying an injured infant. Leeson stared after her with an unpleasant expression.
"Sanctimonious bios," he growled. "They're all like that, you know. More worried about their machines and their protocols than they are about the people they're supposed to be caring for. They think they're some kind of lab coat-wearing priesthood."